Chapter 136. The Valley of Martyr. We went up through groves to an open space, where we heard voices, and a light was seen glimmering from out a bamboo dwelling. It was the planter's retreat, and in their absence, several girls were keeping house, assisted by an old native, who, wrapped up in tappa, lay in the corner, smoking. A hasty meal was prepared, and after it, we essayed a nap. But, alas, a plague, little anticipated, prevented. Unknown in Tahiti, the mosquitoes here fairly eddied round us. But more of them anon. We were up Bedhams, and strolled out to view the country. We were in the Valley of Martyr, shut in, on both sides, by lofty hills. Here and there were steep cliffs, gay with flowering shrubs, or hung with pendulous vines, swinging blossoms in the air. Of considerable width at the sea, the vale contracts as it runs inland, terminating, at the distance of several miles, in a range of the most grotesque elevations, which seem embattled with turrets and towers, grown over with verdure, and waving with trees. The valley itself is a wilderness of woodland, with links of streams flashing through, and narrow pathways fairly tunneled through masses of foliage. All alone, in this wild place, was the abode of the planters, the only one back from the beach, their sole neighbors, the few fishermen and their families, dwelling in a small grove of coconut trees whose roots were washed by the sea. The cleared tract which they occupied comprised some 30 acres, level as a prairie, part of which was under cultivation, the whole being fenced in by a stout palisade of trunks and boughs of trees staked firmly in the ground. This was necessary as a defense against the wild cattle and hawks overrunning the island. Thus far, Tomba's potatoes were the principal crop raised, a ready sale for them being obtained among the shipping touching at Papeete. There was a small patch of the taro, or Indian turnip, also, another of yams, and in one corner, a thrifty growth of the sugar cane, just ripening. On the side of the enclosure next the sea was the house, newly built of bamboos, in the native style. The furniture consisted of a couple of sea chests, an old box, a few cooking utensils, and agricultural tools, together with 3 fowling pieces, hanging from a rafter, and 2 enormous hammocks swinging in opposite corners, and composed of dried bullock's hides, stretched out with poles. The whole plantation was shut in by a dense forest, and, close by the house, a dwarf toa, or species of banyan tree, had purposely been left twisting over the palisade, in the most grotesque manner, and thus made a pleasant shade. The branches of this curious tree afforded low perches, upon which the natives frequently squatted, after the fashion of their race, and smoked and gossiped by the hour. We had a good breakfast of fish speared by the natives, before sunrise, on the reef, pudding of Indian turnip, fried bananas, and roasted breadfruit. During the repast, our new friends were quite sociable and communicative. It seems that, like nearly all uneducated foreigners, residing in Polynesia, they had, some time previous, deserted from a ship, and, having heard a good deal about the money to be made by raising supplies for whaling vessels, they determined upon embarking in the business. Strolling about, with this intention, they, at last, came to Martyr, and, thinking the soil would suit, set themselves to work. They began by finding out the owner of the particular spot coveted, and then making a AO of him. He turned out to be Tanoi, the chief of the fishermen, who, one day, when exhilarated with brandy, tore his meager tappa from his loins, and gave me to know that he was allied by blood with Pomeree herself, and that his mother came from the illustrious race of pontiffs, who, in old times, swayed their bamboo crosier over all the pagans of Imeo, a regal and right reverend lineage. But, at the time I speak of, the dusky noble was in decayed circumstances, and, therefore, by no means unwilling to alienate a few useless acres. As an equivalent, he received from the strangers 2 or 3 rheumatic old muskets, several red woolen shirts, and a promise to be provided for in his old age. He was always to find a home with the planters. Desirous of living on the cozy footing of a father-in-law, he frankly offered his two daughters for wives, but as such, they were politely declined. The adventurers, though not averse to courting, being unwilling to entangle themselves in a matrimonial alliance, however splendid in point of family. Tanoy's men, the fishermen of the grove, were a sad set. Secluded, in a great measure, from the ministrations of the missionaries, they gave themselves up to all manner of lazy wickedness. Strolling among the trees of a morning, you came upon them napping on the shady side of a canoe hauled up among the bushes, lying on a tree smoking, or, more frequently still, gambling with pebbles, though, a little tobacco excepted. What they gambled for at their outlandish games, it would be hard to tell. Other idle diversions they had also, in which they seemed to take great delight. As for fishing, it employed but a small part of their time. Upon the whole, they were a merry, indigent, godless race. Tanoy, the old sinner, leaning against the fallen trunk of a cocoa nut tree, invariably squandered his mornings at pebbles. A gray-headed rook of a native regularly plucking him of every other stick of tobacco obtained from his friends, the planters. Toward afternoon, he strolled back to their abode, where he tarried till the next morning, smoking, and snoozing, and, at times, prating about the hapless fortunes of the house of Tanoy. But like any other easy-going old dotard, he seemed for the most part perfectly content with cheerful board and lodging. On the whole, the Valley of Martyr was the quietest place imaginable. Could the mosquitoes be induced to emigrate, one might spend the month of August there quite pleasantly. But this was not the case with the luckless Long Ghost and myself, as will presently be seen. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.